When we'd been thoroughly greased, we put on rough woolen underclothes, a most disgusting process, and then heavy woolen shirts and smocks tucked into our breeches. We wore stockings and light shoes, and satin-bound bandages round our wrists and ankles to keep our clothing gathered in place. "Now then," says he, "to arms," and produced a couple of heavy broadswords and an assortment of hunting knives. "If you want firearms, you'll have to persuade our friends in Jurtenberg to give you some," he added. "Useless to try to take them with you." Hansen took a sword and a long dagger, but I shook my head. "Haven't you a saber?" Sapton looked doubtful, but a search among his band of brigands outside produced the required article. It was old, but a good piece of steel, and I shuddered inwardly at the sight of it. But I took it. If I have to fight, God forbid, I'll do it with a weapon I understand. And if I was no Angelo with a sabre, at least I'd been trained in its use. For the rest, they gave me back my seaman's knife, and each of us was provided with a flask of spirits. We carried the swords on our backs, looped securely at shoulder and waist, and Hansen bound a length of cord round his middle. There was some debate as to whether we should take flint and steel, but there seemed no point to it. Finally, we each had an oilskin packet containing some meat and bread and cheese, in case, as Sapton cheerfully remarked, we had time to stop for a snack. "You may feel the need of something when you get out of the water," he added. "Eat and drink if chance serves. Now then, Mr. Thomas Arnold, attend to me. From here we ride to the Jotunsee, which will take us the best part of 3 hours. There the boat is waiting, with 2 stout men at the oars. They will take you as close to the castle as seems advisable. There is a moon, but we can't help that. The clouds are thick, so you should get close in unobserved. Then you swim for it, and remember they will be watching and listening in yonder." He let me digest this, his head cocked and his hands thrust deep in his pockets. Strange how these pictures stay with one. And then went on. "Once inside the castle, Hansen is in command, you understand? He will decide how to proceed, who is to guard the prince, who to lower the bridge. So far as we know, it is wound up and down by a windlass. Knock out the pin, and the bridge will fall. That will be our signal to storm the causeway. 50 men, led by myself and Grundvig here." He paused, pulling out his pouch. "It is not our intention to leave any survivors of the garrison."
"They must all die," says Grundvig solemnly. "To the last man," says Hansen.
It seemed to call for something from me, so I said, "Here, here." "Serve us well in this," added Sapton, "and the past will be forgotten. Try to play us false." He left it unspoken. "Now, is all clear?" It was clear, right enough, all too clear. I did my best not to think of it. I didn't want to know any more dreadful details. Indeed, the only question in my mind was a completely unimportant one and had nothing to do with what lay ahead. But I was curious, so I asked it.
"Tell me," I said to Hansen, "back in Strachan City, what made you think I wasn't Carl Gustav?"
He stared at me in surprise.
"You ask now? Very well, I was not sure. The likeness is amazing, and yet there was something wrong. Then I knew in an instant what it was. Your scars are in the wrong places. The left one is too low. But there was more than that, too. I don't know. You were just not Carl Gustav."
"Thank you," says I. "Poor old Bismarck. Wrong again." "How did you come by these scars?" asked Sapton.
"They cut them in my head with a schlager," says I, offhand, and Grundvig drew in his breath. "Oh, yes," I added to Hansen. "This is no kindergarten you're venturing into, my lad. These are very practical men, as you may discover."
I was eager to take some of the bounce out of him. "That'll do," growled Sapton. "All ready, then. Larsen, Sionskaen.